I live in the Bailey neighborhood, and I can safely say that having the Bailey School renovation done in our neighborhood has been a really wonderful addition. We love it. We love the neighbors who live in there, and I think if the Walter French project is on par with that, everyone's going to be very happy.
Welcome to Cattlecast with Capital Area District Library's Executive Director, Scott Dimstra.
Welcome to an exciting episode of Cattlecast. A historic hallmark of the capital city is getting a new life, all while creating more housing for locals. With us today is Raleigh Van Fossen, Executive Director of Capital Area Housing Partnership, to talk about the Walter French Building Project and its impact. Raleigh, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Because of its rich history of the Walter French Building, we're also invited Cattle's local history librarian, Heidi Butler, to the podcast. Welcome, Heidi.
Hello.
We're going to start at the beginning and work our way toward the future. Heidi, can you share some background on the Walter French Building?
Sure. The school was named for Walter H. French, an educational leader who had served as head of the Agricultural Education Department at Michigan Agricultural College, or MSU, as well as the superintendent of public education in Lansing. He died in 1924. Following French's death, the school district purchased a 6-acre parcel of land at Cedar and Mount Hope Streets for $50,000. The school was built in a novel V shape, unlike the two existing junior highs in Lansing, which was East, later known as Patton Gill, and West Junior Highs. Those were both in the shape of a letter E. Walter French Junior High opened in September 1925, and it included 7th through 9th grades, as well as elementary grades that remained in the building until 1950. A 14-room addition was built in 1957, following continued population growth in Lansing, as well as the annexation of the Everett School District into Lansing's. By 1981, the school closed due to falling enrollment, but in 1996, it was reopened as a charter school, which lasted until 2004. It was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 2014.
I think anyone who drives through that corner is familiar with the building as well, too, and it's kind of taking some changes as far as local artists on the side of the building as well, too. And Raleigh, when we first reached out to you for this interview, we learned that Capital Area Housing Partnership used resources from local history in your design process. What were you looking for, and what did you learn?
Absolutely. When the property was first donated to us in our organization, we knew that we wanted to transform the building into affordable housing. That's first and foremost to our mission. But we also knew that that building, as Heidi mentioned, was already put on the National Registry of Historic Places by this community. So we knew whatever we were going to do, there'd likely be some input sessions with National Park Service as well as our State Historic Preservation Office. And so we're fortunate, as you both know, and in our local community to have resources like Heidi. And then one of our first calls and outreach was to say, hey, is it by chance? Do you have anything on this building? And the quick reply was, not only do we have a couple of things, we've got a lot. This was one of the few facilities when the school district built this building that they commissioned photography during its construction and for the year after. So for an agency like us, when we're trying to not only retransform that building into something new, but to also pay homage to the historic integrity that it's offered this community, a resource that the library has been able to offer is huge to our design work. We're able to pull on original photography and see what places within the building and its exterior were like when it first opened, so that when we begin our efforts, we can do our best to get back to that. There's some more technical components to why. We've got historic federal tax credits involved in this deal, so we're fortunate the federal government is offering us funding, but by doing so, it means we have to adhere to certain standards and really try to bring much of the space back to its original character. And so again, being able to pull on resources and seeing exactly what it looked like through photography makes our lives a lot easier. And so we've been appreciative to have that resource available to us.
Thank you so much for the kind words about our local history department. And Heidi, back to you. Have you seen other homeowners, renters, and organizations looking for this type of information?
Local history is property research is probably one of our strongest areas. And so people come to us all the time for even just they want to restore a porch on their home. But we have records of small businesses and, again, of course, the schools, everything from aerial photography to fire insurance maps to directories of ownership and stuff like that that people use to piece together the history of property. So it's one thing we do really well at.
We always kind of call it house genealogy or property genealogy. Raleigh, back to you. Homelessness in Lansing has been increasing over the past few years, as we've seen in the media. Can you tell us about the Capital Area Housing Partnership and how your work brings relief to some of our communities?
Sure. So we're a nonprofit. We just celebrated our 30th anniversary, and we were really formed back in 1992 by a group of concerned neighbors who saw housing in their neighborhood on the decline. There wasn't enough preservation of homeownership. This was actually the historic Bailey neighborhood in downtown East Lansing, if you're familiar. And at that time, they began to see the creep over Grand River from the student population moving out of dormitories and starting to eat up some of the single-family homes. Since then, it wasn't just the Bailey neighborhood that have had that concern about housing in their community. It's really a community effort all across the country, and which allowed the Housing Partnership to expand its mission to be serving mid-Michigan. And within that, we really try to develop strong and diverse neighborhoods, and that looks different for everyone, not only in the housing option that may be available for you, but who we're targeting those services to. So you mentioned homelessness and that we've been seeing an increase of it in our community. And it's happening in our community. It's happening in almost all large urban centers across our country and even across the world. I first asked myself, why? Why do we see homelessness on the rise? And it's generally because we're lacking affordable, quality, and attainable options for folks in our area to move into, whether that's homeownership, whether that's rental, you name it. And so we know through a variety of data, whether it's the recent statewide housing plan that the state of Michigan issued, the Tri-County Regional Planning Commission has just published a housing drive study. We know our community, in some aspects, lacks almost nearly 20,000 affordable housing units in our community. So that's a big task for an agency like ourselves, let alone the community as a whole, to figure out how to address. So as when we look at and see how homelessness on the rise, we have to consider not only is it the housing options or the lack thereof that may be driving homelessness increasing, it's also economic pressures. You both know that we just went through and in many aspects are still dealing with the repercussions of a global pandemic. First and foremost, when we saw as an agency, it's the pocketbook issues, it's the kitchen table issues that a pandemic starts to hit at home, whether you're forced to have to work from home or in some cases you were laid off because you worked at a restaurant job or a hotel job or a service-oriented job. When you lose that income, some of the first bills that start to hit home are your mortgage, are your rent, et cetera. We see that as a driver in homelessness, because if you can't afford those bills, unfortunately, at some point, you may be asked to leave, whether that's through foreclosure or, God forbid, the eviction process. And so we know homelessness is on the rise. We were fortunate to deliver pandemic assistance to renters and homeowners who are struggling to maintain those bills. We assisted over 15,000 neighbors in Ingham County over a two-year period with $45 million in rent, or mortgage, and utility assistance. Those are folks, if they weren't able to get assistance through those efforts, were on the brink of losing their home. All of that's a driver of homelessness. I didn't think about what's a solution. And coming back to the Walter French Project, it's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to create those housing opportunities, not just for neighbors looking for a safe place and an affordable place to call home, but we're also taking a step forward and setting aside units to the neighbors who are even more vulnerable. And those are folks who are currently experiencing homelessness. So while we're creating 76 apartments at Walter French, at least 19 of them will be reserved to folks literally experiencing homelessness at the time of move-in. That's the step forward to trying to flip the question and see a decrease in homelessness is to create solutions like that.
Sure. And staying on the topic of the Walter French building, and we've heard about the history. We heard about it being a very busy intersection and a lot of people driving by that building, and it's a beautiful building. But of all the buildings in mid-Michigan, why the Walter French building?
Sure. And it is a busy intersection. And Heidi would know this from original photos. Cedar Street in 1925 was not four lanes or five lanes like it is now. It was a two-lane road. You know, this was a school, and those were the days where you would walk to school and you'd be able to cross Cedar Street and not have to be concerned about the traffic. But to answer your question, why Walter French? There are many reasons why Walter French fits the narrative of our mission and the work our organization tries to undertake. But the first and foremost was that this was a critical opportunity to provide economic development and housing options for the Lansing community. As you mentioned, if you've lived in this community for the last 10, 15, 20 years, and you've been driving by that corner, you've seen a vacant, empty building degrading over time.
Yeah.
Yet we also know the community takes pride in its architecture, which is why it's on the National Registry of Historic Places. We were approached by the city in December of 2017 as the former owner at that time was not successful in renovating the facility. They actually wanted to tear it down. And the city of Lansing was opposed to that. We had just finished as an organization the renovation of the former Bailey School in downtown East Lansing. And so they had known that our agency not only is a successful affordable housing developer, but we've had a couple schools under our belt. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, we were fortunate to work with the former owner and accept Walter French as a donation. And so it's one, because of the historic nature of the facility, that it stuck out as a great opportunity for our organization to undertake. But then I also look at where it's at in this community. It's really, I consider Mount Hope and Cedar the start of South Lansing. It's the gateway into South Lansing. And as a resident who lives in this community and somebody who works in this community, I think that that gateway deserves a better looking building than what we see now. And our organization wants to be a part of that transformational change.
And hearing you talk, it's clear that Capital Area Housing Partnership really believes in this project as far as making space in the Walter French Building for your new headquarters. We've heard so much positive feedback from other members in the community, businesses, and organizations, but there are some who are a bit more skeptical. What would you want people to know who are feeling pessimistic about this project?
You know, first, I'm incredibly proud to have the support that we've received thus far from not only the public, the neighbors directly adjacent, both residential and commercial, but also the key partners who've made a role in making this project successful. But the top three questions we generally receive about this project are, first is, are our rents going to truly be affordable? And the answer is yes. The way in which we structure rents are governed by the state of Michigan, the Michigan State Housing Development Authority. They're the key funder in making this project successful. So we base rents in partnership with them on your household size and total household income. You'll see rents ranging from anywhere from a one-bedroom rent of $550 to a three-bedroom rent of $1,200 a month. And that's assuming you aren't bringing any sort of subsidy support your own self, whether that's a voucher or some other type of rent support. And when I look at that and see a $1,200 monthly rent payment for a three-bedroom apartment, to me that's affordable because I think you can find one-bedroom apartments in this community that are going for that rate. The second is, will the building and the property be maintained? That's an obvious and a great question mm-hmm. because you could argue for the last 15, 20 years it hasn't been. And so we pride ourselves in not only being successful in starting this project, but we hope it's here for another 100 years. You know, we're going to be wrapping up this project and hopefully inviting its first new neighbors to move in late 2024, which is on the cusp of the building's 100-year anniversary. Our goal is to ensure that this building is here for another 100 years. And so by having us move in and have our new headquarters, we're going to be able to ensure that the property's cared for. And then lastly is, will we be able to ensure safety and stability for the residents who live in the surrounding neighborhoods? We're obviously creating new space, and we're going to be inviting 76 new neighbors to that area. And so the folks who've lived there, whether for a year, if not 20 years, are rightfully concerned to want to know who's coming and who's going to be moving here. I look at our track record. As I mentioned, we celebrated 30 years last year. We were successful in over 10 multifamily developments over that time. That's 500 rental units that we currently own and maintain right now in Ingham County. And I would ask folks in the community, if they have that concern, to go check out those properties. Talk to the neighbors who call those places home. And I'd like to think you'd hear that they have great success in the stewardship in which the Capital Area Housing Partnership has been able to offer.
Well, I can just tell you that I drive by the building every day on my commute. Seeing the actual start and sure. just the fence around the property has got me excited about it.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And you talked about the next 100 years of the building. What do you hope are the long-term effects of this project?
You know, I drove by yesterday, and we just started the demolition, and they should be done today, of the 1970s gym. That's the one piece of the building that's not considered historic by the National Park Service. And so that came down, and I see that as an immediate effect in transforming that corner because we're beginning the project and we're starting to see what it will become. It's opening the facade of the original gymnasium and old former natatorium, where we'll be bringing windows back. But a restoration and reactivation project like this will first and foremost remove the blight that mm-hmm. that corner has seen for the last 15, 20 years. I hope that the folks who get to move in there, both us as a commercial entity and the folks who are going to be moving into the apartments, will be able to take pride and joy in calling Walter French home, as well as the neighbors. I hope that they can look at Walter French and no longer consider it an eyesore or calling us to say, hey, somebody broke in or broke out a window or there's weeds or trash, you name the issue. And instead, I hope they can, if they do call, it's a celebratory call about how it's so great it is to see kids playing on the playground where once stood a home, or how great it's to see folks coming in and out every day and reactivating the space. So that's the long and immediate effect, I hope, for the folks who call that place home. But for the businesses along Cedar Street, I hope that they see this and consider this as an investment. There's some really great businesses that have maintained operation on South Cedar, but have not seen any new investment in a long time. We hope Walter French can be a catalyst, not only for their current businesses, whether they're making facade upgrades, but potentially new businesses. There's plenty of awesome available space on South Cedar, and we hope that Walter French can ignite that excitement for new projects.
Well, I can just tell you, just from hearing the community talk about it, there's several who are very excited about it and can't wait for you to succeed with the project as well, too. And Raleigh, along with housing, there's been discussion about daycare and other support services provided in the Walter French building. Can you talk about those?
Absolutely. And the exciting thing is, when we create a place or when we create housing opportunities, certainly, first and foremost, at the front of our mission is the affordability component. Mm-hmm. What does it take for you to be able to rent affordably or own affordably? But we know that there's bigger and other items that, you know, funnel into that conversation. And childcare and daycare is key right now for families across Michigan, let alone across the country. It's astronomical the amount it costs right now to send your child care or your child to a daycare, let alone if there's even an option available to you. Mm-hmm. So when we undertook this project, we looked at the entire footprint of the building. First, we mapped out where we would want and could place apartments and the services that would need to go with that. And that left us with about 30,000 square feet of additional space, the original auditorium, the original gymnasium, as well as the locker rooms and natatorium. For a multitude of reasons, it didn't work to put apartments there, both where it was at in the building and cost and so forth. And so we went to ourselves to say, what in our community, what does the market want on commercial? And we knew that childcare and daycare was top of that list. I mentioned the Bailey project in East Lansing that we had done in 2018. We have a first floor childcare provider as well in that facility. So we've already had success implementing housing alongside daycare. So we're proud to partner with Capital City Childcare and Youth Organization. It's owned by two women of color here in the Lansing community who both call Lansing home. They replied to a RFP we put out last fall asking for providers who would be interested in about 12,000 square feet of commercial space. They've since signed on to this project. And are going through the design process alongside our new headquarters, where we'll create a housing resource center. So when you're thinking through the building, if you've been inside of it, or you'll see some of the tours we'll be offering these next 2 years, our headquarters will be taking over the original boys and girls gym on the second floor, similar style to the Armory building, if you're familiar with that, on Lansing's east side. And then the daycare is going to take over the former natatorium, will turn into 9 classrooms, and they'll be licensed for up to 110 kids to come and have childcare and daycare services. And then they're going to be retrofitting the auditorium to be kind of a community space for them to do before and after school programming in partnership with the Lansing School District. So those services will be on site both for residents to take advantage of, but also anybody in the community. Whether you're coming in off of 496, going into work downtown, and you're able to stop by Walter French to drop your kid off for daycare, to be able to pick them up on your way out, that opportunity will be there. And then we'll be providing a plethora of supportive services for folks who will call Walter French home, whether that's financial literacy. We'll have activities like a gym on site. We'll have other types of social services and programming available to residents, because there's proof in the pudding that if we bring the service to you, you're a lot more successful in not only utilizing the service, but benefiting from it as well.
This being a library podcast, we always like to end on a library note. So, Heidi, I'm going to ask you first a recommendation for something that you're reading, you're watching, or you're listening to that you would recommend to our listeners. Doesn't have to be related to this project, doesn't have to be related to your work, although it can be.
Well, I have to just stop before I answer that and say that I live in the Bailey neighborhood, and I can safely say that having the Bailey School renovation done in our neighborhood has been a really wonderful addition. We love it. We love the neighbors who live in there. And I think if the Walter French project is on par with that, everyone's going to be very happy.
Very kind of you. Very good.
I am currently reading my friend Samantha Irby's new book, which is called Quietly Hostile.
Nice. Nice. Good recommendation. Raleigh, I'll turn it over to you. Something sure. You're reading, watching, or listening to doesn't even have to be related to work. It could be even something you unwind with.
It is. So I've got two things that I unwind with. And usually on my nightstand, I try to have a nonfiction and a fiction book because it depends on the mood I'm in that night. And usually the fiction is to take away and create a mindless environment, knowing you just came from an 8 or in many cases 10 or 12 hour work day. So on the nonfiction side, I actually just finished this about 2 weeks ago. Is Ari Shapiro, if you're familiar with National Public Radio, He wrote a book, Best Strangers in the World. It was tough to read it because his voice is so great on the radio. So It's a great audiobook pairing as well if you're a fan of National Public Radio. And then my fiction, I'm a sucker for a good love story, and it's also becoming a movie. And it's a queer love story called Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. There's the movies coming out in August. And so I'm just a sucker for something mindless, and that offers me that every night.
Oh, I love it. Both of you, very good recommendations, and we'll have links to those in the show notes as well, too. For having two guests, Raleigh and Heidi, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on Cattlecast and for talking about this special project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't miss another great interview. Subscribe to the Cattlecast podcast and share it with a friend.
Hi there. I'm Tyler Reeder, but you can call me Ty the Library Guy. Hey, did you know that the library can save you money? Yeah, by borrowing instead of buying, you can save hundreds of dollars. In fact, the average family who borrows one item a week instead of buying saves $900 annually. We're not just talking about savings on books. We're talking about mobile hotspots, board games, and more. Check out your Capital Area District libraries by visiting cadl.org. Until next time, it's Ty the Library Guy.